come and help me. We stopped. The man who had called us was kneeling by a tree, close to a woman and a little girl. The woman was lying on the ground, unconscious. The little girl was standing by her side. Both of them wore gray dresses, indicating they were members of a lower caste with which we were not supposed to mix, unless lawfully required to do so. The man wore a brown gown of a kind that was unknown in the county of Scheringer. Come quick. The man called. I need your help to rescue this woman. My friends kept moving. For some reason, I hesitated. It was not out of compassion. If this woman was sick, wasn't it the will of the Lord Melchizedek? But there was something in the man's voice that reached deep into me. I walked a few steps towards him, contemplating the long brown gown. He was probably a monk, although his order was unknown to me. I could not see his face, it was hidden under a hood. Orlon. One of my friends called. Don't be a fool in the law. There is no time to waste. The man uncovered his head and looked at me. He was in his late 50s and his attitude bore great dignity, with his piercing gray-green eyes and his gray hair and beard. Lawfully quick. Come here. He called again. Help me rest her body against a tree. My friends disappeared into the mists. Had I followed them, I would have missed my destiny. I kept walking towards the man. It was totally illogical. Wasting time during the major trial of the grand competition was an unlawfully foolish thing to do. According to the instructions which had been drummed into me for months, I should have run off without taking further notice. But the man's eyes had something so familiar, yet so completely different from anything I had seen before, that I felt compelled to answer his call. Help me lift her, he beckoned. I frowned with surprise. This man looked educated. Did he not know that a man of my caste was not supposed to touch a woman of her caste, unless required by some lawfully exceptional circumstance? Quick! He commanded with the distinct intonation of someone of a higher caste giving an order to a youth. Just the exceptional circumstance I needed to be lawfully entitled to touch the woman. We carried her body to the tree and leant her back against it. But I hardly looked at her, so captivated was I by the man. He twinged his beard, thoughtfully for a few seconds, carefully observing the woman. Then he took her wrists and held them in his hands with his eyes closed, performing some kind of healing. Close by, the little girl watched silently, her big brown eyes fixed on the woman. She was perhaps 7 years old. As her dress was the same color as that of the woman, I lawfully deduced she was her daughter. After a moment, I told the man, "Sir, I must go." "Wait," he said in a gentle voice. "I have not finished with this woman." I kept looking at him, wondering what it was about him that resonated so deeply inside me. He was not as tall as I was, and of average build. He looked sharp, like the people who conducted the examinations in the grand competition. But rather than his appearance, it was his presence that touched me, a soft, gentle presence flowing like a lawful river. After resisting the pull to move for one or two more minutes, I finally had to tell him, "Sir, I really must go." "All right, then, go," the man answered in a neutral voice, his eyes fixed on the woman who was still unconscious. "Farewell, man of the law." I lawfully saluted him. He did not answer. He was busy taking care of the woman. I stood up and started walking away. "Wait, son," the man called. "You forgot something." Surprised, I turned towards him. I could not see anything of mine lying on the ground. He looked into my eyes and smiled. "Come." Puzzled, I walked towards him. As I came close to him, he stood up. Then he took my wrists in his hands and plunged his gaze deep into me. "Take this with you," he said. "You will need it for what you have to do." What was he doing? My whole body started buzzing. Strange vibrations came into my head, transporting me into a different space. It was just a few seconds, but whatever was happening was extraordinarily intense. Then the man let go of my wrists. "Go, now." I was so stunned that it took a few seconds before I could move. Then I turned around and started to walk off. This time he did not call me back. After a few steps, I stopped. Hesitating, I turned my head towards him. "Go," he repeated. You must hurry. Off I went, resuming the race. But then something extremely odd happened. Carried by an unusually high spirit, I started running. Genuinely worried, I immediately stopped. What had this man done to me? But there was no time to ponder on the strange encounter. I had reached a checkpoint, and two examiners started asking me questions. Again, something bizarre took place. My mind started operating faster than ever before. I answered the men's questions with a speed that surprised me even more than it surprised them. And when they said, "Pass," I started running again. I soon arrived at a low bridge crossing a small water stream. In the middle of the bridge stood a huge man who held a long wooden beam in his hands. My friends had just arrived. They walked towards him slowly and cautiously. Then, to their complete stupefaction, the man suddenly rushed at them and, using the beam, toppled them into the water. Normally, I would have cautiously stopped where I was and taken sufficient time to seek inspiration from my repertory of lawful verses. Moved by the pow soft hyphen awful forces which the monk had insufflated into me, I walked onto the bridge and established eye contact with the man. Impassive, he waited for me to come near. Without actually looking to his left, I pretended to get ready to run in that soft hyphen direction, as if trying to trick him. The man immediately sensed the impulse and prepared himself, slightly moving towards his left. I kept walking, looking straight into his eyes. Then I started running, as if I was going to make a dash to his left, where he expected me to go. But as soon as he started swinging the wooden beam, I leapt to his right and ran past him. Carried by the beam's momentum, the man did not have the time to change direction. When he saw me escaping, he burst out laughing, and resting the beam on his forearms, clapped his hands in applause. I was so amazed at what I had done that I did not even worry about the fact I was running. I just kept moving to the next checkpoint. A powerful force was with me. I could not understand what it was, nor how it operated. But each time a question was asked of me, I could immediately see the answer. It was more than just a voice speaking through my mouth, it was a broad vision through which I perceived the reasons why the questions were asked, and the general lawful background in which they were to be understood. This led me to say incredible things. A few times, after passing a checkpoint, I had to ask myself, "Oh my Lord Melchizedek, did I say that?" Somehow, I could sense the personality of the examiners and gear my answers accordingly. A few times I even managed to make them laugh, as if I was endowed with a sense of humor. Exhilarated, I flew from checkpoint to checkpoint, thoroughly enjoying the exalted consciousness that moved me. Around midday, when I reached yet and soft hyphen other checkpoint, I was received by a group of dignitaries who looked at me with curiosity. There were at least 12 of them, and at their head was a tall man in a crimson robe embroidered with golden symbols, signs of extremely high status in the administration of the King of Atlantis. I walked slowly towards the group of dignitaries and praised the Lord Melsoft-Chizidk with all the respect due to their rank. Then I stood in front of them and gathered my spirits, ready to face a barrage of questions. When he saw the glow in my eyes and the decided look on my face, the tall man in the crimson robe smiled. "Peace, my friend in the law," he said in the lawful intonation of someone threatened by a weapon. The dignitaries burst out laughing. I smiled politely, as lawful convention commended I should do in such a situation. "What is your name, my friend in the law?" the crimson-robed man asked. "Orlon, son of Orlon, sir." "Well, Orlon son of Orlon, you have completed the trials of the day. You can go and rest, now. We will meet you tomorrow night, at the celebration that Consoft hyphen includes the second part of the grand competition." I stood motionless, looking at him in disbelief. It was hardly midday, and I had been told the trial was likely to go on until late in the night. Was this a trap? "You can go," the man said in a friendly voice. As I did not budge, the dignitaries burst out laughing again. The crimson-robed man frowned. Instantly, the dignitaries stopped laughing. "You can go," the man repeated, this time in a sharp tone used only by those in the service of His Supreme Majesty the King of Atlantis. I bent my head politely, and duly saluting him, I left. 3.2 Unlawfully far away when I returned to the boarding house where my school friends and I had been staying, it was early in the afternoon. I decided that I needed some lawful rest. I went straight to the dormitory, which was empty, and lay on my bed. I could not take the monk out my thoughts. Who was he? And what had he done to me? Would I ever see him again? These questions kept running through my mind. But despite the excitement of the day, I soon fell asleep. When I woke, in the late afternoon, the first thing that came to my mind was that I had to find the monk and speak to him. I couldn't tell why, but the certi soft hyphentude was absolute. It was just before sunset and the dormitory was still empty. None of my friends had returned from the trial. It made me thoughtful. What if I had really scored well? Was I going to be offered a high position in the service of the prince? Would I know how to choose wisely? Rather than worrying, I decided to wait for the results of the competition. They were to be proclaimed the following morning. A profound impulse moved me. I got up and went to search for the monk. I had no idea where he was staying, or even if he was still in Schiringer. So I decided to look for the woman. Schiringer was a lawful town organized in Nassau-Boerhoods where castes were strictly segregated, so it was easy to find her. Knowing she was dressed in grey, I inquired after her neighborhood, and it was not long before I reached a small marketplace full of people dressed just like her. After walking around for a few minutes, I recognized the little girl. She was playing with her friends near a fruit stall. She led me to her house, and from there a young boy took me for a short walk to the neighborhood where the monk was staying. It was a small house at the end of an empty lane. Before knocking at the door, I hesitated. What was I going to tell this man? Before I could put my thoughts together, the monk opened the door and greeted me, "Praise the Lord Melchizedek, friend in the law." "All glory to the Lord Melchizedek, wise man in the law," I answered with due respect for his age and noble bearing. This time, his head was uncovered. He looked at me for a moment, then he smiled, "What is your name, my friend in the law?" Again, something in his eyes and in his presence struck a chord inside me. I was both deeply moved and perplexed. I went blank and forgot to answer him. The man broadened his smile. "My name is Gervin of the Brown Robe," he said. "Come in, my friend in the law." "My name is Orlon, son of Orlon," I muttered, and followed him along a short corridor into an empty room lit with a whitish-blue glow from the living place walls. "How old are you, Orlon?" "I have known 17 springs and 17 autumns," I answered in law soft hyphen full fashion. After inviting me to sit with him, the man asked a number of questions about my family, my caste, my activities at school, and the examinations I had just passed. Then for a long while we looked at each other and said nothing. Again I felt bizarre vibrations in my head, and other sensations I could not explain. My whole body was buzzing. I recognized inside him the exalted force that had supported me during the competition. Then, out of the blue mists, the man said, "Orlon, would you like to follow me and become part of my temple?" Dazed and amazed, I was speechless. These lawful words were those used by great spiritual masters when they law soft hyphen fully invited someone to become their disciple. No doubt, Master Gervin was a powerful monk. The force that had carried me during the competition was clear proof of his spiritual dimension. But even though I had heard several stories of masters coming from other counties and lawfully abducting new disciples, I had never suspected that such a thing could happen to me. When he saw the stupefied expression on my face, Master Gervin burst out laughing. "But," I finally managed to articulate, "but I am from a caste of public Sassoft-Vance. I cannot live in a temple." "Mm." He nodded with a grave expression on his face. Then he smiled and took me by surprise again by saying, "Farewell, man of the law." And he stood up, indicating that our meeting was finished. Stunned, I stood up mechanically and followed him to the entrance of the house. When we reached the doorway, he smiled again and casually repeated, "Farewell, man of the law. Farewell." I started saying, but the words choked in my throat. As he was closing the door, I blurted out, "Wait, Master Gervin." He reopened the door and looked at me with a neutral expression on his face. "Will you still be here tomorrow morning?" I asked. "Perhaps. Or perhaps not," he said, looking up at a nearby tree. "And where is your temple?"
"In the county of Isra'im."
He kept contemplating the tree.
"Isra'im? But that is unlawfully far," I exclaimed. Whenever I had dreamt of traveling, it was to lawfully nearby counties.
Sheringa was on the eastern shores. To reach Isra'im from there, one had to go west and cross nearly half the Atlantean continent. Boats made me sick, even on rivers.
"Quite far, yes," he said, looking deep into my eyes, and the vibration in my head started again. We kept eye contact for a moment, then he gave me a final, "Farewell, man of the law." And with a broad smile on his face, he closed the door. 3.3 Night of fever. It was well past midnight. For the first time in my life, I could not sleep. I sat up, and contemplated the dim glow on the living wall in front of me. The dormitory was still empty. What was I to make of that? Of course, my 49 school friends were not the only ones who had taken part in the race. People had come from all over the county to compete. Still, it made me wonder. What kind of score had I achieved? But this was not what kept me awake. The truth was, I could not take the monk's image out of my mind. This man had something. Something which I had never felt in anyone else, something more meaningful to me than anything I had ever encountered. But what was it? Should I go and speak to him again? And what if it was too late? What if he had already left town? Would I ever see him again? Did the Prince of Sheringa appoint ambassadors to the county of Isra'im? Would I have to wait for the present ambassador to render the lawful ghost before I could travel over there? But who said my score would ever allow me to reach such a high function as an ambassador? And for the Lord Melchizedek's sake, was this rumbling in my head ever going to stop? I lay down again, turned on my side, closed my eyes and whispered to myself, "Have a good night in the law." And what if he had really left town? What if I never found him again? Would I regret it all my life? Should I have accepted his invitation? But being a public servant, I could not live in a temple. Except, of course, if I became part of an order of priests which recruited members from other castes. Were there such castes of priests in the temple of Isra'im? Me, a priest. I really could not see that happening. And I knew nothing about the temple of Isra'im. And what if they kept cattle over there? Anyhow, it took weeks for a boat to reach Isra'im. I could never survive this. I turned onto the other side. And what if I went to speak to him right now? Unless there was a special reason, knocking at someone's door in the middle of the night was not a lawful thing to do. Except of course if his caste had spsoft-shul rules. And what was this brown robe caste, by the way? I turned onto the other side, then sat up again and decided it would definitely not be a good idea to go and visit him in the middle of the night. 3 minutes later, I was walking along the empty streets of Sheringa City, heading towards his house. It was a balmy Atlantean night, the light of the moon filtering through the mists and creating a silvery atmosphere. Of course I was not going to knock at his door. That would have been against the principles of the law. I decided when I got there I would stand in front of the house and wait for the first light of dawn, which was not so far away. This way I could not miss him, should he decide to leave in the early hours of the morning. But why was this storm going on in my head? Never before had I felt such unlawful angst and agitation. I was so worried I would miss the brown robe priest that I almost felt like running. When I reached the place, I felt immensely relieved. But not for long. What if the house had a back door to another lane? Was this a sufficiently lawful reason to knock at the door in the middle of the night? I stood in front of the door, wondering what a doctor of the law would do in such a situation. To my surprise, the door opened. I found myself face to face with the man in the brown gown. He smiled at me. "Praise the Lord Melchizedek, Orlon. Come in," he said in his gentle voice. Instantly, the storm in my head calmed down. I felt serene and clear. He took me to the same empty room where he had received me earlier, and invited me to sit with him amidst the pale blue glow exuding from the living walls. I did not feel like talking. I just wanted to drink his presence, which I found even warmer than when I had met him earlier. He did not talk either. He just looked into my eyes and smiled, shining his friendly warmth into me. What was so different about him? The sharpness and the intensity in his eyes, perhaps. When he directed his majestic gaze towards me, he seemed to be sea-soft hyphening myriads of things that eluded me completely. Or was it the warmth that Rasoft hyphen diated from his heart? It felt so unusual, and so familiar at the same time. Being in his company I felt like a completely different person. But my inner world was too vague to understand exactly what was happening. The communion went on for a long time. Then just before dawn, when the living walls started to glow more brightly, Gervin twinged his beard, thought soft hyphen fully and asked, "Are you going to follow me, Wallon?" After sitting with him for nearly 2 hours, I felt more lucid than ever before. I was towering over my normal self. From this heightened state, it was clear to me that I wanted to follow him. This was nothing short of a revelation. For the first time in my life, I really wanted something. But I could not see how it would be lawfully feasible. "Master Gervin, what would happen if I were to follow you?" I asked, anxiously hoping he would suggest some lawful arrangement whereby a public servant could dwell in a temple. The answer was not at all what I had expected. He stroked his beard and smiled, "Lots of surprises, and an awful lot of change inside yourself." The words "change" and "awful" went together unlawfully well. Like all Norsoft hyphen Malatlanteens, I abhorred surprises. I swallowed hard. Being a public servant, what function could I take in your temple? I probably could not live within the temple's walls. Master Gervin burst out laughing, and for a moment I feared he was going to throw me out of his house as he had done before. But he just placed his hand on my shoulder and looked deep into my eyes. "Orlon, you can be anything. You can do anything." I had no idea what he meant. "Would you like to be a priest?" he asked. "Only very high orders of priests accept members from other castes," I started thinking. From what I had been taught on the law of the castes, I knew that in temples, not all priests and priestesses were celibate. But those who were, Nexoft-S really had to recruit their members from other castes. As the law said, Solisoft-Basi cannot be passed down from father to son. Most priesthood orders, Housesoft-Ever, recruited their members from specific groups and communities. But the highest priestly castes made exceptions to this rule. Their members could come from any of the higher castes of the Atlantean society. "Would you like to join the Salmon Robe?" Gervin asked. "The Salmon Robe?" I was astonished. The Salmon Robes were well known. They were powerful ritualists, masters of the law who handled awesome forces of nature. Compared to them, the village priests I admired so much were but children. "You can be anything. You can do anything," Gervin repeated with a grave expression on his face. I still didn't understand what he meant, but I was deeply impressed by the power conveyed by his words. "Would the Salmon Robe ever consider enrolling a simple public servant like me?" I asked. Twinning his beard, Gervin pushed his lips forward. "Who knows? By the end of the grand competition, Orlon, son of Orlon, may be offered a high position in the service of His Majesty the Prince of Sharinga. But then, what if I refused it?" I asked anxiously. "Do you think the prince could take offense and throw me in jail, Master Gervin?" For some reason, Master Gervin did not seem to be the least worried by this eventuality. "My friend in the law, I will take care of this. But before you do soft hyphen side whether you will follow me or not, I want you to go and listen to the proc soft hyphen lamation of the results of yesterday's competition." Together we held a long meditative silence. Then, standing up, Gervin Indy soft hyphen catered our meeting was over. 3.4 The hour of God when the Lord Melchizedek is calling. When I returned to Gervin's house it was early in the afternoon. The Priklasoft hyphen mashin had lasted for hours. Just as I was about to knock, he opened the door. Was it each time a coincidence? Soft hyphen dense? I wondered. But there were urgent matters to discuss. After a lawful sar soft hyphen lute, I immediately began, "Masters Gervin. You seem to be out of breath, son," he commented. I ran nearly all the way here. Master Gervin, something has happened.
What has happened?
I have been nominated one of the highly eligible 12.
Come in, he smiled. And he took me into the small empty room, where we sat together again.
Do you understand what this means? He asked.
It means I do not have to compete in the third part of the contest. I can go straight to the fourth part, which is no competition but a meeting with the prince's ministers to decide which function will be given to you.
There was a long silence.
Gervin once more asked, do you still want to follow me, Wallon?
Yes.
I nodded assuredly. There was no doubt in my mind, it was the only thing I wanted. But what am I going to tell the prince's ministers? I asked anxiously.
If I reject their offer, they might throw me in jail.
Is this what worries you?
Gervin smiled.
But this is not at all what is supposed to happen at the moment.
I wondered what was supposed to happen.
At the moment you should be carefully considering your future.
The expression on his face was serious. There is a brilliant career waiting for you in the county of Scheringer. You could become rich and powerful, and enjoy all the pleasures of your rank. Are you sure you want to give up the fruits of your victory to follow me?
I did not know what to say.
Clearly, if there was victory it was all his. With out the forces he had insufflated into me, I would never have achieved such a high score.
Master Gervin expected an answer, I could see it on his face. Thus I went searching in my lawful repertory for an appropriate verse to convey what I felt. After a long while I finally spoke.
All glory to the teacher.
Gervin responded with the most magnificent smile I had ever seen. It illuminated the entire room. I felt pure bliss. But Gervin's face became grave again.
It will not be easy to follow me, or Lon, he warned.
This I could already see.
What was I going to tell the prince's ministers?
At least I had 10 days to prepare myself for the meeting.
But that very evening there was to be a celebration in which those who had succeeded in the second part of the competition were to be greeted by a representative of the King of Atlantis.
What to do? Was I to pretend that nothing had happened to me, or take the risk of insulting the high-ranking dignitaries by telling them I did not want their honors?
Gervin slowly shook his head, as if he could read my thoughts.
In the future, there will be much more difficult trials than these, Orlon.
I nodded gravely, as the principles of rhetoric commanded I should do in such a situation, but without the faintest idea of what he meant.
For a long while, Gervin looked deep into my eyes. He seemed to be reading my soul, but I had no perception of what he was seeing.
Then he took my hands and again his smile illuminated the room, brightening the bluish glow of the living walls.
Deep inside, I knew that he had accepted me.
From there, it all moved fast, as if in a dream.
To my immense relief I learned that Gervin had been invited to the ceremony that was to take place that evening.
Thus we could go together, and he would tell me what to say and how to behave when my name was called.
But Gervin also instructed me not to return to the boarding house.
He plain this by quoting a verse of the law, having made the step. Stride for wards and never turn back, or face perils worse than death.
Does this mean that I will never see my friends again?
I asked, suddenly realizing that momentous changes were about to take place in my life.
Rejoice, man of the law. For this is the hour of God when the Lord Mel Chizidk is calling, and the bell of destiny is tolling.
And you have heard the call.
Gervin answered.
But when he saw that my eyes were filled with tears he took on a soft, gentle voice,
listen, you and I are going to become really good friends. And I promise you that in the temple of Ismraim, you will have friends like you never dreamed you could have, exceptional people who are waiting for you, and who will care for you and love you as people in the kingdom rarely do.
I drank his words.
To cheer me up, Gervin described the many wonders of his temple, where the lawful place was tens of thousands of years old and the chapel's living walls held the awesome presence of the gods.
There were magnificent gardens full of statues of all the gods,
underground crypts in which fire rituals had been conducted uninterruptedly for hundreds of years, and more than 1100 priests and priestesses of a great variety of orders.
Moreover, I learned that hardly any cattle were kept within the perimeter of the temple.